This news brief brought to you by the International News Net.
U.S. officials say there's growing evidence Pakistan's ISI spy agency encouraged a Pakistani militant group, the Haqqani Network, to carry out last week's attack on the U.S. Embassy and NATO headquarters in Kabul. A U.S. Senate committee voted this week to make $1 billion in U.S. aid to flood-ravaged Pakistan, conditional on a crackdown on militant groups. Former Afghan President Burhanuddin Rabbani was killed Tuesday in a suicide bombing. A survivor of the attack, an aide to the former president, said Rabbani was lured to his death by the bomber, who claimed he was representing a mysterious figure mediating between the government and the Taliban's senior leadership. NATO leaders Wednesday authorized a 90-day extension of the alliance's mission in Libya. NATO began enforcement of a four-month no-fly zone over Libya in March. NATO fighter jets have flown more than 20,000 sorties over Libya, dropping thousands of bombs to take out Muammar Gaddafi's command centers and military materiel. Hundreds of civilians have been reported killed. Amnesty International says it has uncovered evidence that rebel forces in Libya have committed gross human rights abuses, some amounting to war crimes. The rights group also reveals the Western media deliberately ignored or covered up the widespread atrocities. In a report released Tuesday, Amnesty accuses the rebels of unlawful killings, arbitrary arrests, and widespread torture of civilians, mostly black foreigners. The report also confirms widely held concerns about the NTC's ability to unite the country and oversee a peaceful transition. Many attacks are focused on blacks suspected of being sympathetic to ousted dictator Muammar Gaddafi. The report states angry groups of supporters of the February 17th revolution shot, hanged, and lynched dozens of captured soldiers and suspected foreign mercenaries, and did so with total impunity. Gaddafi's supporters have accused NATO of killing up to 800 civilians. Amnesty says both the NTC and Gaddafi's forces are to blame. U.S. combat troops in Iraq may be heading to the exits, but the U.S. government's enormously expensive intervention there is hardly coming to an end. U.S. officials are planning to expand the gargantuan embassy in Baghdad, a heavily fortified, self-contained compound the size of Vatican City, by far the largest embassy the world has ever seen. Inside its high walls, guard towers and machine gun emplacements ring not just the embassy itself, but more than 20 other buildings. The number of personnel under the authority of the U.S. ambassador will swell from 8,000 to about 16,000.
More details on these stories, visit innworldreport.net.
You are listening to the Rule of Law Radio Network at ruleoflawradio.com. Live free speech talk radio at its best.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's the 19th of September 2011, and you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia with your host, Herewood Fenton. I have coming up in the show in about 15 minutes an interview. We have a lady coming on to talk about a conference that is running in Sydney, and I have the information here right before me, Building a Creative Economy at Balmain Town Hall, an intensive forum on new approaches. It is possible to create a healthy and prosperous society and to replace bad decisions by better decisions. The destruction of our planet, our bodies, and our culture is not economically necessary. Overpowering one another has not proven an effective social or political strategy. There are other solutions, and they are possible. That's just from a flyer for the event. Looks like it's connected to the Rudolf Steiner organization. Rudolf Steiner was a writer, philosopher, who influenced education and had a lot of interesting ideas about society. And the lady who's coming on to talk to us, her first name is Carla. She will be explaining a little bit about some of Rudolf Steiner's ideas and also the conference and what the conference will contain. So I hope you'll enjoy that interview coming up shortly. In other news, well, we had the September 11 anniversary last week, and in Sydney we put on a film, which was the Architects and Engineers' latest film, The Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And the film screening was a great success. We had a small venue, but it was full. And a lot of new people turned up to that event who hadn't been to these types of things before. We publicized it fairly well. And we got, you know, really strong feedback. And it's really good to know that there are more and more people who are interested in this. Of course, the other side of the coin is that by looking around you, you will get the impression that nobody cares. And that is also partly true, but it's only part of the story. People are suppressed. Their voices are suppressed, and they find it difficult to know how to speak out. That's the nature of the system that we're living under. Now, I also had an opportunity to write an article for a major mainstream publication here in Australia, based in Sydney at News Limited. The publication is called thepunch.com.au, and it's an online publication, but it's part of the family of news websites owned by News Limited, which owns about, a conservative estimate, about 70% of the press in Australia, I'm afraid to say. Yes, we have a massive monopoly here, all under the auspices of Rupert Murdoch, who is, of course, an American citizen. But that's another story. At least they've given 9/11 Truth an opportunity to be heard. We had a flood of comments. It certainly set the record for the week, probably for a much longer period than that, I would say. The comments are, well, not that impressive. Most of the people who were against the thesis of my article didn't really have much to say. I'll just give you a quick synopsis of the article, but you're welcome to have a look at it online at thepunch.com.au, and we'll put links to that on our show notes. I'll just read you the first couple of paragraphs from the article. On this sad anniversary of the worst terrorist attack in post-war history, I am reminded of the prophetic words spoken by President Dwight D. Eisenhower in his farewell address to the nation in 1961. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. Now, that quote is actually from a televised address. Quite a remarkably candid admission there from a president and a great military chief to point out the dangers of the military itself. And, he gave way to Kennedy. And, of course, Kennedy did try to rein in the military-industrial complex to some extent, but he didn't get very far, as we all know. Now, just continuing from my article, Eisenhower was the supreme commander in Western Europe who had led America to victory against one of the most evil regimes in history, a man who had witnessed the depths of human depravity and wanted finally to warn us that the war machine which had been created to defend freedom in World War II could equally be used for the opposite purpose, and that it was up to the American people to guard against this possibility. Eisenhower coined the phrase military-industrial complex, which became the catch cry of the anti-war movement of the 1960s, describing an economic and political fusion of power involving armaments manufacturers, construction companies, banks, democratic governments, and puppet dictatorships. As Marine Major General Smedley Butler put it, war is a racket. Now, just an aside to this particular quote, Major General Smedley Butler was a very important figure in American history because he almost single-handedly prevented a fascist coup from taking place in the US at the same time as Germany was being overrun, or taken over by the Nazi tyranny. There was a similar move towards a fascist takeover in America. And some of the people behind that were actually bankers who had helped to fund Hitler. And some of them actually had the name Bush. It's a fascinating story, and I really strongly recommend looking into it. And I'd love to really do a show on it and really, really investigate this particular bit of history, because Smedley Butler was quite well positioned, you know, in the Pentagon, and he knew what was going on. And he was a kind of an insider, but he blew the whistle on it and managed to stop it from happening. And didn't really earn much credit for it. He kind of went into obscurity almost after that. But anyway, here's a quote from Smedley Butler. "I spent 33 years in active military service, and during that period, I spent most of my time as a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. Looking back on it, I might have given Al Capone a few hints." These and other observations about the racketeering, lying and theft that is the essence of war have informed many of us around the world who today call ourselves 9/11 truthers. The central argument of the movement is that 9/11 was a staged false flag operation designed to propel the US and its allies into war for the sake of profit, oil, and empire. False flags are defined in Wikipedia as covert operations designed to deceive the public in such a way that the operations appear as though they are being carried out by other entities. There are numerous examples in modern history where clandestine government agencies or rogue operatives have acted in this way, collaborating in the hatching of staged terrorist plots, the launching of self-inflicted military assaults to be blamed on the enemy, and in the formation of domestic terrorist organizations. There is not enough space here to address these complex cases, but I encourage the reader to do an internet search on phrases like false flag, strategy of tension, Operation Gladio, Operation Northwoods, attack on the Maine, Gulf of Tonkin incident, Reichstag fire, the power of nightmares, to find historical precedents which have a chilling resemblance to the events and aftermath of 9/11. Sorry, that was just my phone going off there. So, look, I'll just leave it at this point, but I will actually read you one of the comments from today. And the comment is actually a reply to a comment I left. I discovered this morning on my Facebook profile a quote which I would have loved to have put in the article, which is actually from Senator Max Cleland, who was originally on the original 9/11 commission. And he quit in disgust. And here are his exact words. "This is a scam. It's disgusting. America is being cheated. As each day goes by, we learn that this government knew a whole lot more about these terrorists before September 11 than it has ever admitted. Let's chase this rabbit into the ground. They had a plan to go to war, and when 9/11 happened, that's what they did. They went to war." Now, this is one of the top people who was hired to look at 9/11, and that's what he said. Now, During the time that this article has been online, there's been a flood of trolls, and I say that, you know, advisedly, they are trolls. I say that conservatively, I say that honestly, they are trolls, and the people who are detractors in terms of trying to get the information about the 9/11 false flag operation across are acting without good faith. They are merely throwing mud, merely trying to derail the discussion, merely making accusations. And the response here from the comment that I left is a classic. Wow, you people are still spamming this thread with your 9/11 nonsense. I find it amazing. Here we are 10 years on, and you wood ducks still haven't figured out 911, yet the heroes on Flight 93 figured out 911 within minutes and sacrificed themselves to save countless others. Your failure to comprehend this reality is a slap in the face to their bravery. Let it go, truthlings. You are wrong. Let the victims rest in peace. They deserve that much. And you are just pissing in the wind with this 9/11 inside jobby job gibberish. So that is the level of intellectual discourse that we have. Need I say more? On its own, I think simply the level of intellect of our detractors shows that we're winning. Back after the break.
Corn and Bullion is a family-owned and operated business that has helped many families and friends in protecting their assets, and we would like to do the same for you. In addition to coins and bullion, we now offer Patriot safes, ammunition, Berkey water products, gift certificates, wristbands, and our new silver pool, a new way to guarantee silver by prepaying at a locked price. We can even help you set up a metals IRA account. Call us at 512-646-6440 for more details. As always, we buy, sell, and trade precious metals and cater to those with all sizes of coin collections. We're located at 7304 Burnett Road, Suite A, about a half a mile north of Koenig, next to the Ikebon Sushi and the Genie Car Wash. We're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, Saturdays, 10 to 5. Visit us at CapitalCoinAndBullion.com or call 512-646-6440.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors with phone calls, letters, or even lawsuits? Stop debt collectors now with the Michael Maris Proven Method. Michael Maris has won 6 cases in federal court against debt collectors, and now you can win too. You'll get step-by-step instructions in plain English on how to win in court using federal civil rights statutes, what to do when contacted by phone, mail, or court summons, how to answer letters and phone calls, how to get debt collectors out of your credit report, how to turn the financial tables on them and make them pay you to go away. The Michael Maris Proven Method is the solution for how to stop debt collectors. Personal consultation is available as well. For more information, please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the blue Michael Maris banner or email michaelmaris@yahoo.com. That's ruleoflawradio.com or email michaelmiras@yahoo.com to learn how to stop debt collectors now.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back to the show. Well, as promised, I have an interview tonight with Carla Cryer, who is one of the organisers of the conference I was mentioning earlier. The conference is titled Building a Creative Economy, and it's on October 29th and 30th at Balmain Town Hall. And Carla Cryer and also Twi Lee are on the line tonight to discuss the conference and some of the philosophical ideas behind the conference. Welcome, guys, to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
It's great to have you aboard Truth News.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, look, one of the featured speakers in your show is Ian Crane, who came on our show about a month ago, and we had a really great interview. We got into so many interesting topics, and we were just kind of, you know, barely touching the surface of what we could have talked about. And I understand that Ian Crane actually was originally brought out by your organization, by your group. The event that we were speaking about with Ian Crane was actually a separate event, which is down in Melbourne. Now, would you be able to just give us a quick overview of what building a creative economy is about and what you hope to achieve from it?
Well, obviously, everyone knows to some extent that the economy or the structure of the economy or how it's working at the moment is not working well. But there are very few alternatives being offered in a very clear way. Lots of people are pointing out some of the reasons why it's not working well. What we wanted to offer was new pictures of how the economy could work. And so we got a lot of people, or we canvassed quite a number of speakers, including William Engdahl. Some people might know he wrote a book called Gods of Money. And
sure.
He will be brought out by us next March, who were actually going further than just criticizing the current picture, but, you know, offering solutions. So building a creative economy is about the offering of the new solutions and the discussion of new solutions, so people can actually think how a better system could be run.
Right. So you're trying to open up some discussion as well. Is there going to be like an open forum in the conference for people to bring their own ideas?
Yes, absolutely. So the conference is structured so you have an international speaker. One of them will be Ian Crane, and then another international speaker called Terry Boardman, who will be bringing a big social picture. And then you will have a panel. And on that panel, you will also have people from local organisations, such as the Zeitgeist Movement or the Greens, and who also have, obviously, economic pictures. And at that panel, people can ask questions, and we will probably have some divergence in opinion on the panel.
Right. Yeah, good. Which you want to encourage discussion, debate. So you've got the Zeitgeist Movement there. Any other groups that you can mention that are actually going to be attending? Any other political or social movements?
Yes. We have an organisation called ERA, which is the Economic Reform Australia.
The Socialist Alliance as well.
Ah, the Socialist Alliance. That's interesting. Mm. Great.
And an organisation called the Search Foundation, and possibly we've got Helena Norbert Hodge coming to speak as well, and her organisation, I've forgotten for the moment what it's actually called. So there are several others.
Excellent. That sounds really, really interesting. And you mentioned William Engdahl, and I've actually got a book. I think I've got two books that he wrote. One of them is actually about genetic engineering.
Yeah,
and
the seeds of destruction. Yeah.
Yes, that's the one I bought recently.
He replied right away, and he was really happy to come to Australia, but he needed a somewhat large onarium, it's called, which we didn't have, but we're hoping in this conference, if this conference is successful, that we will have the money to bring him out following this conference.
No, that's absolutely fascinating. And
yeah, we're also offering free tickets, by the way.
Oh, great.
So we're offering, for people who call in or however you structure it, we're offering two free tickets to the conference and two free tickets to the Ian Crane event, which is a separate event on Friday, also in Roselle at Hannaford Hall from 6 p.m. till 10 p.m.
That's terrific. Now, Carla, I was wondering if you could, when we were talking earlier, you explained to me the concept of social threefolding,
yes.
Which was an idea coined by Rudolf Steiner.
Yes. Yes.
And I'd just love it if you could present that again to our audience, because I thought it was a really interesting sort of philosophical approach to how society works.
Yeah. Steiner was very concerned at the First World War. He was alive during the First World War, and he was very concerned about the picture that was being presented of why the war had been caused. And he indicated that if the Woodrow Wilson's 14-point plan was brought in, that there would be another war within 30 years, which there was. And he tried very hard at that point to bring in the threefold social order as an alternative to the 14 Woodrow Wilson's 14-point plan. And he actually spent 3 weeks with the person chosen by the Kaiser to bring the Versailles Treaty through. However, at the last minute, that person conceded and dropped the idea of the threefold social order for the 14-point, Woodrow Wilson's 14-point plan. And, of course, we then did have the Second World War 30 years after the First World War. Here's what he said, that if we don't structure society into three autonomous or independent parts, like if we structure society with one dominant force at the top, that it would lead inevitably to people not having very much say about what was going to happen in society at all.
And what are the three parts again, just in summary? The three
parts are the cultural sphere, and that cultural sphere involves the media, publishing, books, research, anywhere where the thinking or the free thinking of people is there. And the principle in that cultural sphere needs to be freedom. So people need to be free to research anything in society, alternatives as well as non-alternatives. They need to be free to have different forms of education if they so choose. They need to be free to be able to express themselves artistically. Right. And at the moment in our culture, the economic life has captured the cultural life so that, you know, you can get research for the major companies, or you can do, you know, the economic life sponsors has captured in a way the media, the research, the education system.
Okay, so we've got the cultural sphere, that's one sphere. Now, the other two?
And the other sphere is what's called the rights sphere or government, and the rights sphere has to have the principle of equality, so people have to have equal rights, and the rights have to, you know, be enforced, and that is the job of government, is to enforce equal rights. It's not there to promote economic life, it's only there to enforce the rights. And the other or more autonomous sphere is the economic sphere, and the principle there is to meet the needs of people so that people's needs are met, and to make sure that the production and consumption of goods has a free flow to all sectors of the society.
Okay, so that's the third sphere.
That's
third
the economic sphere.
It's the economic sphere. So we've got cultural, we've got the sphere of human rights.
Yeah.
And then we've got the economic sphere. Just a quick question, where does science fit in?
Science fits into the cultural sphere.
Okay, so science, art, music, it's all part of culture.
It's part of discovery, and you should be able to, for example, there's a lot of talk about the suppression of certain kinds of technology, yeah?
Yes, yes.
And so, and that is, again, it has to be free to research all kinds of technologies rather than technologies pushed by certain corporate interests, yeah?
I see. And I think in our society we have an economic, scientific, rationalist dictatorship to some extent.
Yeah.
Which kind of, it's sort of an authoritarian kind of scientific system, though, because it says, well, you know, these are the facts, or this is the consensus view, and anyone who disagrees with that is not part of what is real science, and therefore we'll just ignore it. And they tend to do that.
It's very, very hard. For example, you know, if you have a complementary medicine, it's very, very hard to get any kind of research funding to study the complementary medicines in a scientific
way.
Carla,
we're just going to break. We'll just have a short break, and we'll be back right after that, and we'll go for another segment to discuss
cool.
it. Thanks a lot.
Great.
This is Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that fell on the afternoon of September 11th.
The government says that fire brought it down. However, 1,500 architects and engineers concluded it was a controlled demolition.
Over 6,000 of my fellow service members have given their lives.
And thousands of my fellow first responders are dying.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
I'm a structural engineer.
I'm a New York City correction officer.
I'm an Air Force pilot.
I'm a father who lost his son.
We're Americans, and we deserve the truth.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org today.
Could printed books soon be a thing of the past? Apparently, a lot of kids these days are exchanging book pages for web pages. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back to tell you what's happening to literacy.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights. Say no to surveillance and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
Forget books and magazines. A recent study by the UK's National Literacy Trust found that text messages are the number one reading material for kids today, and numbers 2 and 3 are email and Facebook. That's not surprising, since cell phones and computers outnumber novels in most homes. We adults are obviously not setting a very good example. Of course, text messages are not known for their literary quality or for their outstanding spelling and grammar. In fact, they're some of the worst writing around. So if you want your kids to develop basic English skills, tell them to unplug from Facebook and turn off Twitter, then hand them an old-fashioned book. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
Welcome back to Truth News. Tonight we're discussing some of the ideas of Rudolf Steiner and a conference that's to be held in Sydney next month called Building a Creative Economy. And Carla has just been explaining some of the philosophical ideas behind Rudolf Steiner that Rudolf Steiner brought into, you know, 20th century thinking, and you know, some just different way of looking at the world there. I found it quite intriguing. And you were saying earlier, Carla, that Rudolf Steiner was actually assassinated. Can you explain a bit more about that?
After his participation, sort of at one step removed, in the trying to get a better resolution to the First World War, the Goetheanum, which is the sort of Steiner major center in Switzerland, was burned to the ground in 1923 on New Year's Eve, and in 1924 he was fed a poisoned sandwich at a New Year's Eve celebration as well. He slowly died of that because his nutritionally he couldn't deal with protein after that.
Right.
And so he took 15 months to die, and during those 15 months he brought through the biodynamic lectures. And if he had actually died, there would be no biodynamic farming and no biodynamic products.
Which has been incredibly influential. And it's one of the most sort of important organic food systems around, isn't it? I mean, it's one of the ones that's kind of sustained. It's still there. Like, there's been, you know, ebbs and flows. There's been, like, different trends in health foods and things. But the biodynamic seems to have really lasted.
Yeah. And with 7 years, and this has been verified, with 7 years of biodynamic treatment, a piece of land can be redeemed from having been poisoned.
And where did Rudolf Steiner live? Where did he live and where did he die?
He was born in on the German Austria, in German Austria, and then he died in Switzerland.
Right. Okay. Well, that's a really interesting little bit of background there.
The conference is not, though, about that.
Yeah. He's one of the influences, but not a dominant influence, just an influence. Yeah. Now, I might just bring Twi Lee into the discussion. Twi, you're also involved in organising. What's your participation in the conference?
Well, I suppose I'm a student during the day.
Sure.
And Carla and I were discussing one night about how, you know, the G8 and the G20, et cetera, these organisations meet very regularly, and they're essentially multinational corporations and governments that come together and really just divvy up resources and direct government policies of other sort of countries. And so we kind of came up with an idea that, you know, that there is a strong need to have an alternative sort of force where the same model could be placed on all the different organisations around. Well, we wanted to start in Sydney first, but all these little sort of organisations like the Socialist Alliance and the Socialist Alternative and all these little sort of groups that really, when you put them together, they really have about three or four common goals, but for some reason they're not collectively coming together to pool the resources and the knowledge and sort of to share information and things like that. So to really gain more of a momentum and have more of a presence and a legitimacy in society.
Can I just make a point about that?
That's really how the groups come about.
Sure.
And the group who are involved in organising this conference, we have other initiatives as well. But essentially, Carla is a psychologist, and I actually work for an environmental charity as well. We have a nurse on the board, and we also have, you know, a drama therapist, and a few people a few other people who are really interested in just helping people. So we don't come from a background that is, you know, no one has an economics qualification or a business qualification or a marketing qualification. So we're really kind of flying by the seat of our pants, essentially. But we felt like this was a very important thing to put on, and the reception that we've gotten so far has been phenomenal. I think the time is right. And people are really tapping into what does this idea of growth mean? What does this idea of a healthy economy mean, actually mean to people and real people every day walking the streets?
Okay. I'd just like to make a point about, you know, the groups, some of the groups that you've brought together here, and I think it's really great. But one thing I've noticed, see, some of the people you've got speaking and some of the themes that you're obviously taking on board are actually perceived, and I'm really only talking here about perceptions, not realities, but the dominant sort of attitude from people in socialist organizations is that people who talk about, for example, questioning the official story of 9/11, questioning even climate change, talking about the secret actions of organisations that might be trying to work towards world governance in a somewhat tyrannical way, which people like William Engdahl and people like Ian Crane are totally, you know, comfortable with, and will talk about at length, but are seen by some of these groups as being conspiracy theory, and then they call it right wing. And this is the language they use. And, of course, it's not the language I use. But they use the language like that. And we've had, because I'm involved in the 9/11 truth movement, and we've often done street actions where, you know, we'll go down to the markets and there'll be Socialist Alliance people there, and they won't even talk to us. And I was pretty naive in the beginning. I mean, I thought, well, let's just share some ideas here. No, I don't want to have a bar of it. And not only that, they look down on people for wanting to get, you know, justice and truth and clarity. And it wasn't just 9/11. There were other topics. So topics like big pharma, vaccines, medications. For some reason, and I still don't quite understand it, the lobby groups that are tied in with socialist organizations are also tied into a mindset. And it's a mindset that seems to be, and I really wish it were not the case, but it's a mindset that seems to be part of the corporate oligarchy in some sense. And I mean that the corporate government oligarchy in the sense that they do not want to question certain beliefs, and but they want to bring in a socialist system. Now, this has actually been a source of great, you know, concern to a lot of people that I know as to why this is the case, because I've always been open to all kinds of social ideas and intellectual concepts, but there seems to be a trend within organizations that call themselves socialist towards something that is more what I would call fascist, and I'd just like to get your take on that.
Well, it's an interesting point, and we haven't pursued that at any great length. But it is challenging, but our sort of common point is their concern for the common good. It's interesting historically, because if you believe some of the literature, both the socialist and the capitalist movement were funded and supported by the same set of people.
Okay.
So that's an interesting point.
Yes.
However, the individuals I have met are very sincere in their concern for issues that concern all of us. The issue of poverty, the issues of asylum seekers, and
the environment.
And so we were hoping, in order to kind of create a common ground, that we would focus on what we have in common and build from there, hoping that in the end some sort of understanding could be brought about. That may be naive as well, but anyway, that's our starting point and that's how we're proceeding.
It makes a lot of sense. And let me just say, like, my perspective is neither right wing nor left wing, and I find those terms pretty useless. They're not meaningful. They're not helpful. I am of more of a libertarian bent than a centralized big government solution type approach.
Yeah.
Now I'm not quite sure where you're sort of, you know, where you sit along that spectrum. I mean, I of course acknowledge that government is necessary as a central organizing principle. You have to have organizing principles in the world, and I think I wouldn't call myself an anarchist either. I don't go that far, but I'm certainly more of a libertarian bent, and I'm very aware of the dangers that happen when the individual surrenders too much of his power to the government, believing that the government is there to protect and not putting a lot of checks and balances on what the government does.
And we really have in place at the moment.
Yeah. It is very much what we have in place at the moment. And particularly what I find what is happening in Australia with the carbon tax, and I'm not quite sure where you guys sit on that issue, but having studied, looked at the science, looked at all the facts, looked at what they're trying to do, I think it was best summed up by the Czech President Václav Klaus when he came out to Australia. He said, this is not really about the science. He said, this is about you're trying to impose a new social order. You're trying to enforce a social order using the science as an excuse. And he drew the parallel between that and what took place in Eastern Europe through the Cold War, that basically it was really an excuse to bring in a centralized big government system heading towards global governance, and that it was masquerading in a sense by using the science to justify that.
At the conference there will probably be more than one different point of view advanced around the carbon tax, but the point is that people start thinking about it. What distresses me is,
Carla, we're just going to have to break. I'd really like to get you on for the next segment, if that's okay. We've got one more segment coming.
Okay, great.
Yeah, great. Thanks very much.
Fine.
The Oklahoma City bombing. Top 10 reasons to question the official story. Reason number 2, why was the ATF AWOL? Paramedic Tiffany Bible, who was on the scene within 5 minutes, has stated in an affidavit that agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms told her that they were not in their office that morning. EMT Catherine Mallett also overheard one agent say to another, quote, is that why we got the page to not come in today, end quote. Bruce Shaw, as interviewed on KFOR-TV, was also told by ATF agents that they had been paged to not come into work. The ATF initially denied these claims and now variously claim that one of their agents was in a free-falling elevator, which has been disproven, or that they had been in an all-night stakeout, or that they had been at a golf tournament. As they try to sort out their lies, all we want to know is, did the ATF receive a warning? And if so, why did they not pass it on to others in the Mirabelle? For more information, go to OKCBombingTruth.com.
At HempUSA.org, we offer chemical-free products to people around the world, detoxifying, self-healing, while rebuilding the immune system. We urge our listeners to please consider our largest-selling product, Microplant Powder. Our microplant powder is rich in silica and probiotics to help rebuild the immune system and to create a healthy stomach flora. Microplant powder is excellent for daily intake and is perfect to add to your storage shelter. We urge our listeners to please visit us at hempusa.org. And remember, all of our products are chemical-free and healthy to eat. We constantly strive to give you the best service, highest quality, and rapid shipping anywhere. And we offer free shipping on orders over $95 in the U.S. Please visit us at hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. That's 908-691-2608. See what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you at hempusa.org.
When you're sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Welcome back to the show. Look, I'm going to extend our interview for another segment because I think we're just getting into some really interesting points there, Carla. We were just talking about some of the conflicts in ideas and some of the maybe unknown agendas or hidden agendas between people who are involved in social groups. Did you want to can just continue from where you were left off there before the break?
I was just mentioning that the carbon tax, that different points of views will be brought forward on the carbon tax at the conference.
Okay.
However, what disturbs me is that there seems to be only one point of view filtering through, like people saying, it's the only choice we have, it's the only choice we have, it's the only choice we have.
Right.
And quite well-meaning people who want to do the best they can for the environment will speak like that, it's the only choice we have. That's
right.
Not actually correct. And that has to actually be brought forward more, that it isn't the only choice we have, and that there are, in fact, all kinds of other choices as well. So, I mean, we're just trying to create free thinking, yeah?
Okay.
So that people can actually freely think things through and things that are hidden or obscured. I mean, for a lot of my life, I had no idea who issued money, who, you know, how the interest rates were set, how I had no idea of these things, yeah?
Absolutely.
Or what was debt, really, what was a nation's debt and to whom was it? You know, if these things were not clear to me, and I think it's probably unclear to many, many people in the society.
And sometimes it feels like it's deliberately set up that way as well, that it's quite murky and quite vague, and these things are set up so that we don't sort of question it.
Yes, I think most people have no idea how money is actually created in our economy, and I discovered.
Not the right answer. That's basically it.
Yeah. I mean, I discovered it sort of by accident probably about 10 years ago. Started, you know, picked up a few books here and there, and I realized that the debt-based economy, and since then it's become, you know, fairly wide knowledge among you know, certain people who've looked outside the box, but most people still don't quite understand that the entire monetary system is based on debt. I mean, what do you think of that? Like, what's your take on that?
Well, that will be also quite clearly expressed in the conference, as well as Margaret Kennedy's work, where she quite clearly shows in a very very clear way that anyone can comprehend, but that is not simplified, of how interest, the way interest also moves, is a consistent transference of money from the poor to the rich. Because the capital that is used, say, in order to create a business and the interest that the business charge has to pay on the capital they use is passed on to the buyer. It's always passed on to the buyer.
Right.
So the buyer is not only paying, is paying the interest of the corporations, the interest, yeah?
Yes.
So in fact, like 10%, and she has a wonderful lecture at the conference on this, which is another aspect of the economy that is not understood.
Right,
yeah,
right.
And the whole manipulation of interest is also not understood. So at the conference, some of these sort of obscurities or complexities will be very, very clearly spelled out in a way that they are completely comprehensible, and there is time allowed for questions after each speaker if there is any problem.
I think, would you say that the situation we're in now is where we have such a barrage of propaganda from those who kind of want to set the agenda for how society should work, that and that it's such a simplified picture of how things really work that a lot of people tune out. A lot of people aren't even thinking
yeah.
deeply at all. And I mean, I know a lot of people who are quite smart, but they don't even think about it. Like, they don't even think about the carbon tax. You know, they don't even like most people actually. If you dig a bit, they don't really understand it. They don't necessarily agree with it. But then the solution that a lot of people seem to have adopted in our society is to just stop thinking. And of course, that's encouraged by television and,
yeah.
and all the drugs we take and everything else that just keeps us in this state of not thinking, which is
but
the biggest problem.
There's a certain paralysis that's caused. Like, as a psychologist, I know, like, in an individual case, if you live in a dysfunctional family, or if you live in a family where there's a lot of lies or half lies or spins, or, you know, something that's like propaganda, if you like, the reality, or to sort out the reality, becomes confusing. It becomes like too hard. So certain things are simply placed in a too hard basket. And, you know, as I say, in a dysfunctional family where you still have to live in that family, certain aspects of the dysfunctionality is just ignored. It's just, you know, you've got the denial. Things, but when things become very difficult, as they are, and at the moment you've got a world movement, I don't know if you heard about it, it's the Occupy Wall Street movement.
No, I haven't heard of that one.
So
can you explain?
What people are going to do in America, they're planning a sort of strike, a huge protest. Around Wall Street, and that is being matched by equal protests in Japan, in Europe, in many of the European countries. I just got that from the alternative media in America, I guess.
Okay.
So people are becoming aware this is like a window of opportunity, because people are beginning to be impacted in here, in the Western world. I mean, people in the third world countries were always impacted in a huge way through debt to the World Bank and so on. But we are beginning to be impacted, and certainly in America they're being impacted, and certainly in Europe they're being impacted. So there is this awakening taking place where people will have to come out of denial, you know? And we're just on the edge of that awakening, so it's actually a very exciting time.
Yeah, well, it's great to see some positive angles on this. There's just so much negativity, and it's really hard to try and forge any direction
yeah.
when you feel overwhelmed by it. Well, I mean, I hope that the conference gets a good turnout. Have you got a website for the conference?
We do have a website, yes. The website is www.buildingacreativeeconomy.com.
Okay, buildingacreativeeconomy.com.
Yeah, so
yeah.
You've got double E at one point, building a creative economy, you know, and sometimes people miss the website because they don't put the double E's in.
And the tickets are being sold through Daisy Tix as well, which is a Sydney ticketing agency. But just before we go, I just wanted to sort of say that even though we're not formally qualified, we're I believe that the group is an intelligent, questioning, caring group, and I think that this represents the majority of the people in our society as well. And this weekend forum is really a space to allow everyone's sort of voices to be heard. It's to talk about parallel economic models, alternative economic models, complementary currencies, ethical banking, and this will all be discussed by academics and grassroots activist groups, professionals, students. So what we're interested in is really a solutions-based approach that encompasses and addresses the questions and needs of the widest social spectrum possible.
Excellent.
And again, it's on at the end of the month of October, and we would love to see anyone who's interested in the future of a healthy economy show up.
It sounds like definitely not to be missed. And it's at the Balmain Town Hall, is that right?
Yes, on the last weekend, the 29th and 30th. And there are also side events as well.
Two free tickets.
And we're offering your readers, some lucky listeners, two free tickets as well. So, but there's also a dinner with the speakers, and the side events are really what we're saying. We're doing, we mean what we say when we say we want to include everyone, and they're cheaper tickets to see the international speakers on the side. So they're $25 and they're $15 for concession.
Yeah.
And they're Friday evening events as well.
And there's a stand-up comedy version.
Really?
In the Friend in Hand Hotel.
Great. Yeah.
On the 31st. So that's dinner plus stand-up comedy on these issues.
That should be great. Yeah, Friend in Hand. That's
with the international speakers there.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. A great little pub. Used to have a lot of poetry and various things there. It was well known to a lot of people in Sydney.
Yeah. So that should also be very interesting.
Excellent.
Because you do need to laugh at it as well, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And look, just finally, I just might just get an idea from you, Carla. I mean, you've studied psychology, so you've actually you're actually trying to understand the psychology as well of the state we're in. You mentioned like the sense that we're kind of a dysfunctional world. When you see that there's such differences between, I mean, there's really hard ingrained positions now in between groups of people. And I mean, I really hope that you're actually able to get some people coming to this event that are from both sides of that divide. And I'm thinking particularly about the climate change issue, particularly about the carbon tax, because really it has been so dominated by just extremely one-sided kind of propaganda. And most of the propaganda is in one direction. I mean, there has been obviously some attempt to reverse that with the carbon tax protesters, etc. But most of that has been very, very underfunded, very, very grassroots, despite the fact that they always say, well, these people come from, are getting funded by big oil. I mean, I've been to these events. These people are just, they're writing their own signs. They don't, GetUp has all this published, beautiful flyers and everything. GetUp has the air of an organization that has a lot of money and a lot of power behind it. But if you could get someone from GetUp to come to this conference, I think it would be very important and very helpful.
Well, we did actually visit GetUp today, and we actually talked to them, and they said they would try.
Well, I think they will probably try to boycott it. I don't want to be cynical, but I just have my doubts. But I know there's a lot of individuals in all of these organizations who are genuine, and we've got to get to the people who are real and not worry too much about what the people setting the agenda at the top are doing.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So we definitely have two different positions on all those issues that you mentioned. But we sort of feel that the economy, or the way the economy works, underlies...
We're going to have to wind it up, Carla, sorry. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Carla, we're going to have to wind it up.
Sure.
It's been great having you on.
Thank you. And I really look forward to talking to you
at the conference. Thanks.
All right,
thank you.
Bye.
The Bible remains the most popular book in the world, yet countless readers are frustrated because they struggle to understand it. Some new translations try to help by simplifying the text, but in the process can compromise the profound meaning of the Scripture. Enter the Recovery Version. First, this new translation is extremely faithful and accurate, but the real story is the more than 9,000 explanatory footnotes. Difficult and profound passages are opened up in a marvelous way, providing an entrance into the riches of the Word beyond which you've ever experienced before. Bibles for America would like to give you a free recovery version simply for the asking. This comprehensive yet compact study Bible is yours just by calling us toll-free at 1-888-551-0102 or by ordering online at freestudybible.com. That's freestudybible.com.